Now we're ready.
By now, you mean.
Holy shit, it's the Sprocket Podcast. This is where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way with syllables.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, and the internet. And today, women's
cycling issues.
Yes.
Yeah. We had a great chat just now with Martina Farner and Ellie Blue. Martina was here in person. Ellie was elsewhere. It was a little scheduling thing. We thought she was going to be here, and she thought it was some other time.
Had the wrong day?
I think it was just a... Now I feel like I shouldn't be talking about it because, you know, I don't want to make her seem like a bad person because she's awesome. But we had a Skype.
Communication breakdown of some kind.
Yes. But we got her thoughts anyways. And so that's the wonder of technology and the internet.
Yep.
On a completely different note...
I hate technology. Oh, no.
You wish you could be in a lead line basement?
Yeah.
Not so that you could get lead poisoning, as I thought, but just so that the signals could not reach you.
Yep.
Yeah. You hope to live a long and happy life.
Long, happy life.
Surrounded by lead.
Surrounded by lead.
Not poisoned by it.
Not eating lead.
So I just went to Bend, Oregon for kind of what felt like a short weekend.
No shit.
Yeah, it's
you're in Bend.
Mm-hmm. That's why there's that big ass truck in the driveway.
I thought that was Martina's at first, but then she rolled out on bike.
She rolled out on a bike. So this weird thing. My friend Kathy just turned 30, and she for a weekend she just wanted to get away. She works as a personal trainer, and so she knows all these rich people that have like tons and tons of stuff. And one of her clients says, so thanks for helping me work out and telling me, you know, like. How many reps to do and that sort of thing. Would you like to use my timeshared cabin in Sun River?
Wow.
And so she said, sure. And for her birthday celebration, just said, hey, let's all go down there. Let's hang out. We'll make some food. We'll hang around, walk, ski, that sort of thing. And so the guy who hooked her up with the cabin also said, so do you want to use the truck too? And so me not having a car and, you know, as we all know, there's no good way to get to Bend with public transportation. So... basically it was, you know, we go out, we hang out, we have a good time and, all of that with the use of this big Tahoe that's in the driveway.
Nice.
So yeah,
nice.
It was a nice amenity. I realized, it's a weird culture and class difference. Like just the places that we hung out, the places we went to. Sun River is kind of it's a vacation community. So
yeah.
Very few people, if any people actually live there year round, And we went into town to 10 Barrel Brewing, and it was kind of funny. Just like the average income, I think it was almost perceptible. Like you could see the people around me, and you could tell just by looking at us, looking at me, and looking at them that they made about three times as much as I do.
Sure. Do you feel like you were a contest winner or something?
I kind of felt like I was a lottery winner who didn't know how to, you know, didn't know how to take care of the money from the winnings.
Sure. And you're just there. I want a free trip to Sun River.
Exactly. Yeah.
Me and my wife.
Yeah. I'm also at the height of my scruffiness with like my beard really needs to be trimmed badly. Yeah. And my hair, I'm overdue for a haircut. So I felt very scraggly in the midst of all these shiny, you know, well kept people. But we had a good time. It was a good weekend. I drank a lot of Old Crow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that makes for good times.
Yeah. So there was that. I just had my bike worked on. I'm nearly back to zero as far as my bike being taken care of. But
oh yeah, you took it out to Velocolt.
Yeah, Velocolt. I had for the first time, I had my bike completely professionally tuned up, and it was about a $200 bill. I had some pieces and parts that went missing, or they didn't go missing. They just need to be changed.
They fell out along the road.
They fell off. Yeah.
Sounds like one of my old cars.
So I had the rear cassette replaced and the chain replaced, obviously, because those things wear out pretty quick. And now I have to get the front. At least one of my front chain rings needs to be replaced because I rode it for so long with the old thing. Yeah, it's all worn down.
Right.
So the brand new chain and cassette are skipping because the front chain ring in the middle, I think, is the one that's actually feeling it.
Sure.
So I need to see if I can just get one chain ring without having to buy the whole set. But if I do, you know.
Well, if I recall correctly, you just, well, as recently as like maybe 2 years ago, got a whole new front system. Because your old one, you couldn't do exactly that, right? You wore out the old, one of the old chain rings.
I did.
You had to replace the whole thing as opposed to replacing just once. So I guess be hopeful.
That may bode well for me, yeah. So yeah, I'm excited. Oh,
are we doing all right with the recording in the wild?
We will be. Hang on a moment.
The amazing dissertation by Aaron Flores.
Okay. I think we're what's happening with this? Oh, there we go. Okay.
God dang it.
Okay.
See, I hate technology.
Seriously. Aaron, anything exciting happened for you recently?
I just sat around in a lead-lined basement.
Perfect.
No, I went up upon Mount Hood with my special lady friend. Ooh. And we went snowshoeing. Did not see a single human the whole time we were there.
Really? Which part of Mount Hood did you go to?
Well, that's the funny thing.
It doesn't actually exist. We stepped out of space and time.
we found a loophole in reality and stepped through it.
I love those.
We were going to go to White River. Which is up past government camp, up past Timberline, on 32?
Okay, 35.
35, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, up after the junction anyways. And we're looking for the signs. We did not realize this at the time, but apparently we should have been looking for White River West.
Okay.
But we found White River East, which, you know, is a little bit further.
Yeah,
on.
Significant difference.
Yeah. All we saw was sort of a little kind of scoop in the road, or beside the road anyways, where there wasn't any, or where the snow was sort of pushed out. So we parked the car there. Still not quite sure if this is it. We're like, well, it says White River. So, you know, we walked there. The road that's supposed to go down to the trailhead is all snowed over. We were walking basically at the level of where the guardrails are, like at the height of the guardrails. Okay. There's so much snow. And, you know, we just walked on. We figure, well, at least this is the general area. We'll just walk around here. Saw the river, so again, thinking, well, as long as we keep the river on one side of us, we'll be all right.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along the way, we realized we were actually walking on the river. Like, there's like all this hard-packed snow, and the river is going on underneath us in different forms. Like, it's not like rushing on or anything like that. But
a river runs through you. Yeah.
Or at least underneath us. But yeah, just all of these different tributaries going back and forth on either side of us. It was an awesome time. We had lunch up there. We were there a good 3 hours, maybe.
Nice.
Hiking back and forth. Again, didn't see another human. It was warm, too. Oh, my gosh, the sun was out. It was a clear day, great views of Mount Hood. I was just in a long sleeve shirt. She had ditched her coat in a tree at one point.
We'll come back to this later.
Yeah. We'll backtrack to it.
Nice.
And we go to leave. Oh, I was maybe a quarter of the mile from the car on the way back, and I just could not go any further. if I was cycling it, you know, it'd be like one of those situations. I think they call it the bonk.
Oh,
or whatever.
Yeah. Like you're just out of energy.
Yeah.
Your body no longer has reserves.
And it hit like a wall.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, oh, I'm feeling tired now. It was just bam, I'm done.
Yeah.
And there was nowhere, like, what am I going to do? Sit on the snow or whatever.
Right.
So I just stood there like mouth agape, eyes all droopy.
Just going,
And we were out of water too.
Oh, wow.
I guess I could have scooped up some snow and sucked on that, but
that's true. You
know, it's not like I was all that conscious.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that's too complicated for a bonked brain.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, my girlfriend leading me almost as if I was the family dog. Come on, you can do it.
You can do it.
You know, and I could see the bank, and just beyond the bank, I know the car is there, but yeah. I'm just dragging my feet.
Right. So close and yet so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, we make it and I eat some and I feel all right. And we start coming back down the mountain, and on our way down, maybe about a quarter of a mile from where we had parked, big signs, White River Trailhead, and then a parking lot, and all these cars parked there. Oh, that's where we should have been.
There we go.
But however...
But you had the unique experience. You had, like, the really getting out in the wild sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, as we drive by the parking lot, there's, like, cars in there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty full. It was such a nice day. You know, I don't blame people for yeah. getting out. And,
but
and in fact, I congratulate them for getting out and being in nature. But yeah, in the meantime, we kind of felt sort of validated, like, yeah. We took the right turn anyways. Yeah.
You don't want to, if you go out to the woods to get away from it all, you don't want to be out in the woods with all those people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, hey, congratulations, sir. Well done. We should do some news real quick before we get to the interview.
Yeah.
And while you're pulling that up, I'm going to drink this shot of Old Crow that I poured. I was going to have it. I don't know when I was going to have it. Anyways, it's here. I'm going to drink it now.
I imagine you were going to have it while we were talking.
Probably so, yeah. And then I'm going to drink LA Blues iced tea. And then you're going to drink this Jones Soda.
Jones Soda root beer.
Perfect.
I'm back in high school.
Back in black. Well, hey, here is some headline music.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
That root beer was kind of sharp. It's almost like a sarsaparilla.
Yeah. Jones is known, I think, for being kind of sharp with their flavors.
I was a little surprised. Headlines. Adventure Cycling Association launched an online touring database for past trips. Sweet. They say, we want to hear about your bike trips so we can begin to establish statistics for bike travel. Everyone is encouraged to enter their trips as far back as 1975 and add their thoughts and experiences so that others may learn and understand how satisfying bike travel can be. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I already put one of mine in there, and it's well worth the time. If you've gone on a trip, you can help people do that same trip, or you can inspire them to their own creativity just by saying, hey, I used this resource, and it was great.
Sweet. Portland afoot, Kathy Hasty?
I believe so.
Compare Zipcar and Car2Go as alternatives to ownership. Kathy took 1 week for each car sharing method to be her exclusive form of auto transportation and evaluated their merits and challenges. She found Zipcar to be a nudge toward responsibility due to its reservation system and found Car2Go to be like a teenager's dream date, spontaneous, fecund, and curfew-free. Her conclusion? Car sharing is neat, but old habits, like personal car ownership, die hard.
It was really cool, though, to read some of these summaries, and she did like a day-by-day sort of journaling of the experience.
Okay.
So, yeah, Zipcar and Car2Go, both, there's two separate articles. So if you go to Portland Afoot, it's a great read, really cool. And one of the biggest things was Car2Go works really well, she said, for people with smartphones. But if you don't have a smartphone, Car2Go is a crapshoot. Basically, you know, she was trying to find out where the cars were, and she would like have her daughter look one up on the computer at home while she was calling her on the phone.
Okay, so yeah, Car2Go, like you kind of need to know like up to the minute.
Basically, yeah, because at any point someone could swoop in and grab it. And if you drive one home, like, you know, say the night before, and you wake up the next day saying, oh, I'll take that Car2Go into work or something, like it may not necessarily be there. So that's kind of the biggest thing. Like basically, if you want to use Car2Go to its full potential, it's good to have the internet with you as well.
Ah.
So yeah, but that was a great story. So well recommended.
Sweet. Urban Adventure League, Portland's Midnight Mystery Ride turns 10. Congratulations.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I apologize. I wasn't there.
Neither was I.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just getting old, man.
Why did you do it in February, guys?
Why did you start in February? Yeah. But there's Sorry. A long and storied history of it. Yeah, it's great.
The first ride happened on the second Friday of February 2003, and it happened every second Friday of the month without fail. Since then, the format is simple. A ride leader proposes a meetup location at a bar, and riders ride a distance of approximately 5 miles to a secret mystery location to hang out and such. Someone made a map of the ending locations. Add your info if you want.
Yeah, and that's the kind of maybe the coolest thing about it is the idea that you can plot all these locations. My first mystery ride is not yet on the map, but I got to drop that down.
Yeah.
So if you're familiar with Google Maps, you can drop little pins onto the map and give them titles and labels and that sort of thing. So
the first one was the Pirates Island.
Pirates Island, yeah, right down on the east side of the Willamette River. That was a beautiful, beautiful little ride.
Yeah.
Beautiful destination.
Yeah.
So.
No, it was really nice, and the weather was great.
Yeah. Have you had a favorite mystery ride, Aaron? The ones that you've attended? Because I remember...
I hate to sound hokey, but you never quite forget your first.
Reminds me of my first time.
And I don't know who it is I ran into. Well, I mean, I ran into all of the mystery ride. It was just a spontaneous thing. I was coming home from a bar, no less, and just happened to ran into them on the corner of 52nd and Woodstock on my way home. And just this mass of cyclists. I had no idea what the Midnight Mystery Ride was at the time. But since they were going the same direction I was, I thought, hey, I'll join in and ask what this is all about. And I asked just some random rider whose name I never bothered to get. Sorry. And, you know, it's like, hey, what is this, like a party? What's going on?
Is there a thing happening?
Yeah.
Here?
What's happening? And amid the lights and the noise, the guy was like just totally stoked. It was like, Midnight Mystery Ride, dude. It's so awesome. He was like totally talking this up as if like not just that he's enjoying the ride, but he's enjoying being able to share that with somebody.
Totally.
You know, who's a complete noob.
Yeah. Several times going through town late at night on my way home, I'll bump into people who are going for, what is it, the first Friday of every month? Second Friday.
Second Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Second Friday on the calendar month. And there will be people going towards the starting location. And they'll be like, Midnight Mystery Ride, come with us.
You know,
it's like,
awesome.
I really want to, but I'm also, usually at that point, I'm so tired and I've already spent, you know, some money on alcohol or something. And I'm just ready to turn in for the night. So I have to start planning.
Yeah.
And keeping my midnights free on those days.
So.
Yeah.
Don't take our absence, Midnight Mystery Ride, as a lack of
enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take it from me, as someone who often when it rains takes the bus. Not always, but you know, like.
Yeah, I'm just not as hardcore as you guys.
I think I have been harder core in my harder of core. How do you say that? I've been more hardcore in my life earlier on.
I liked harder of core.
And now that I'm like past 30, I feel like I've kind of passed this certain benchmark where I can no longer, it's not that I can't do it, I just don't want to anymore. You know, I don't want to be out in the rain with a pair of sneakers. I don't want to be late at night when I could be asleep in my bed. So I don't know. I think I should take the funnest parts of being young and maybe try and get back into those again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a little nostalgic can go a long way.
It's true. Well, hey, let's close out the headlines and then we'll bring you it's pre-taped. The interview that we just had with Martina.
We just taped it like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. And then we'll come back with some mail at the very end, and then we'll be done.
Happy anniversary, MMR.
That's right.
You're taking a lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
Is it back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I think I'm good.
Yeah. It's all that damn tinnitus.
Stagnant pools. I still blame them.
I've been having weird flare-ups just like in the past couple days.
Really?
Where like all of a sudden my right ear will just go whoa and then it
like
goes
out of
away.
The blue.
But yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Seemingly from nowhere. So
yeah, I've had that since I was a child.
I had whistling, but
Oh, yeah.
I have whistling in my ears very often, but not like the wow sound.
Ellie, do you have tinnitus?
I do not.
Oh, congratulations.
Somehow.
That's good. That's good.
Certainly didn't, never avoided the risk, so I got lucky.
Right, right. Okay, well, hey, since we're here, let's get rolling. I am Brock. That's Aaron Flores.
Word.
Martina Farner from Clever Cycles and other things from the internet.
From the internet.
Yeah. And Ellie Blue from Taking the Lane and also the internet.
Hi, y'all.
Okay, so we were going to do a roundtable discussion on the women and the cycling industry, and there are many... prickly ways to approach this topic, but I was thinking basically I'd kind of set the topic on the table and let you two kind of run with it, and then we'll just kind of interject.
Yeah, I don't believe I have any, you know, say. I might have a few like witty comments here and there.
But right, right.
As far as anything intelligent to say on this subject.
Yeah, and I'm a white male. And I feel like I'm as far away from being able to comment intelligently on the subject as possible. So really, I'm hoping that maybe I'll learn something as I listen to you guys kind of explain the situation.
Well, that would be great.
Okay.
Definitely looking forward to that.
So where would we start then? What's a good stepping off point?
What do you think about women in the cycling industry?
Well, Ellie, I gave Brock over coffee while we were standing upstairs in the kitchen a little bit of like my history, where I'm coming from, and what sensitized me, especially in the last few months, more about the theme. And so chime in when you want. And so basically one of the kickoff things for me was that in October of last year, there was the first National Women's Bike Summit. And while I don't really believe in gender segregation, it was awesome, awesome, awesome to see a bunch of women bike advocates on a pile. And we had like this really wonderful and outrageous and heart-wrenching discussions and presentations, and one of them actually was Ellie. Ellie like gave this really, really cool presentation about women in bike advertising. It was wonderful and hilarious, and I learned a lot from it. But I really started to think more about women and bicycling, and one of the things that I really felt was at this first bike summit, women's bike summit, that there was no industry there. And later on, I actually realized why, because it was literally 3 days before Interbike. So everybody from the industry was already in Vegas setting up. And so, you know, and people asked for, you know, people were definitely invited to the Women's Bike Summit. But I was like, hey, it would have been really cool. And one of my ideas was really to talk to somebody from the bicycling industry. So I kind of rubbed some pennies together. And when I heard that the second Women's Bike Summit is actually going to be a mere 6 months later in Washington, D.C., coming up March 4th to 6th, I thought, I really want to go there because I really, really, really want to talk to people from the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And while, I mean, we somehow already do it a little bit when we are at Interbike, but it's kind of a sideline, definitely. And there were some women-specific workshops at Interbike, and naturally you ran into some of the reps of bike firms that do frames for women, that do products for women. But I thought and somehow felt that it needs to be a little bit more focused, it needs to be a little bit more. And so I'm going to speak at the National Women's Bike Summit.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
In Washington, and I'm going to be there also at the... Now, how should we say that gender neutrally at the common National Bike Summit? the male national,
what was
both
that?
Gender.
Go ahead, Ellie.
Oh, that one has historically been about 90% men, so I don't think it would be entirely inaccurate to call it the Men's Bike Summit. Just, I don't know what they're calling the first one, the Women's Summit, but I think we can just call that one the regular summit.
Okay, yeah.
So,
well, I was also thinking, just mentioning Interbike, they've been famous, I think, for, is it booth girls? Is that the technical term for?
Much less now.
Is there less?
It's less.
Okay, that's good.
I mean, I went to Eurobike, and it was definitely more in Europe than it was here.
Okay.
So it's getting better.
Yeah. Ellie, did you write something about booth girls? I couldn't remember.
I think I've made some commentary about that cultural phenomenon in the past, but it does seem to be on the decline. I'm not sure if that's because of more awareness or because of declining budgets, but it does seem like the bike industry overall is suddenly starting to sit up and think, like, maybe they're not thinking, how can we help introduce women to bicycling, but they are starting to think, okay, how can we not look like idiots? And that is an important first step.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that just the problem that I remember hearing about was that, yeah, basically people are using sex to sell bicycles and anything associated with bicycling at this kind of industry. It's where everyone goes kind of to get the new info and the new deals and all that. So, yeah, it's nice to know that, that people are actually starting to think that maybe that's not such a great idea and maybe it's a little sexist. So, yeah.
Yeah.
what are some of the primary issues then? What are we looking at? What are some of the gaps? And Martina, you were talking a little bit about this when we were in the kitchen earlier.
Yeah, and I'm trying not to sound frustrated here.
It's okay if you do.
I'm practicing the formulation of like positivity. So I think that there are obviously gaps in the product palette. There are products there that perhaps need a little bit of tweaking. That was a formulation one of my mechanics came up with, which I thought was really good. And, you know, she's a woman too. So the basic idea that I want to throw out there, and please correct me if I'm wrong, please do correct me when I'm wrong, is that we are pushing a group of individuals towards cycling that are not always served with the products that are already there.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of women that we are trying to convince to do more cycling are definitely what the bike industry would probably call a fringe market. And so I think with a little bit of tweaking, the bike industry could actually has tremendous opportunities to go into a new market and discover an entire new market. So, for instance, larger rain jackets, because the range of bicycle friendly attire is definitely limited.
Mm-hmm.
See how positive I am. How positive I am.
Well done.
I am so positive. There are frame sizes. There are types of bikes available to women. And then we actually also branch out in the add-on products like kid seats, because, I mean, that is like really one of the big target groups that we are thinking, the target markets that we are thinking about, like the mom in the SUV with the 2-3 kids, trying to get those on bikes. And that actually also means that we need to think about trailers, that we need to think about good kid seats,
mm-hmm.
that we need to think about bike frames that are accessible to women under 5'5", that are then also that you are then able to be outfitted with kid seats. And it sounds really easy, but it can be a total nightmare. Because you're thinking about seat tube heights where kid seats attach to or back racks, it becomes really tricky. We are also talking, for instance, about bike trailers. If you have looked at some bike trailers, 3-year-olds are already crunched up into them. If you put 2-3-year-olds in a bike trailer, in a regular bike trailer, mm-hmm. they're sitting like little tiny hunchbacks in there.
Right.
And so... Basically, I think what I'm looking is kind of a confluence of two things. So on the one hand, we're putting a group with fringe market potential into cycling. And then we have a lack of product development. Well, I don't want to say lack of product development, but I think product development in the bicycle industry in this type of market can be improved. So, for instance, if you stay with the trailer, you know, if you plan out the trailer with the aluminum frame and so on, why not put actually, you know, two kits in there and try, you know, test it out.
And see if it actually works.
And see if it actually works. Because, sure. I mean, I it's so hard. It's like I hear it so often from customers that, you know, I would like to put my five-year-old in the trailer because he's not really there yet with cycling on the street, but he doesn't fit in the trailer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have 2-3-year-olds who will not go in the trailer because they're basically totally smushed up.
Yeah, right.
In there.
It's like a can of sardines.
Yeah, like a can of sardines. And so I'm very happy because I do, there are some alternative products that I can propose to these moms, but why shouldn't there be a trailer that fit perhaps 1 or 2 kids? Perhaps even 3 kids.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that is tricky because then it becomes also a weight issue.
Sure.
But again, I think there's so many opportunities, and I feel that there is a little bit of a standstill there. I would like to see more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can really challenge ourselves, especially here in Portland, because we have an infrastructure that would actually support more invention into this, like farther thinking on this. But what I, and this is where the frustration comes in. I do get emails very, very frequently from, "Hi, we're a new bike firm. Guess what we're doing? Single speeds. Yeah." And it's just like, okay, guys, how many single speeds do you think are out there? It's
sure.
Like very simple bikes. And I'm just thinking like, God, you know, the first firm who writes me an email about, "Hi, Martina, we are a new bike firm, and guess what? We're making commuter bikes for women." I think I would just kiss and, like, you know, fall on the floor, and they would be my absolute heroes.
Yeah,
so.
Over the moon, yeah. Ellie, your take, clothing and bicycles just available in the things that are specific to women's needs?
Well, I love hearing Martina talk about this because she has so much experience with, you know, working with people in Clever Cycles who come in and need bikes to fit their needs, and then working with people in the industry to try to get those bikes. And it's almost like you're a matchmaker, Martina. You're trying
to
create this love match between people and their bicycles. And sometimes it's hard. It's like you're the only. It's hard to find an eligible date sometimes, especially when you're not a super sporty person. This really makes me think, one of the issues that I find really compelling, or one of the things I find most compelling about the women's cycling movement, is it's less about like women are this way and men are this way, and it's more kind of a way to have a safe space and a unified voice for, like, okay, all of us, women and men, have other needs for bicycles than are being served by the bicycles available. And I think in part that's because the history of bicycling, the recent history of bicycling in the U.S. is a sport, and it's a very macho sport. And I really think that culture of sort of macho-ness and bravery, and it's like, you know, me alone or me and my team against, you know, ourselves and against the road and against traffic, and it's this kind of like riding into battle, and it's an adrenaline rush, and I feel like drawn to those parts of bicycling in a way, but also I see that seeing bicycling as only that way and creating mostly bikes that do that really is very alienating to
mm-hmm.
most people, both women and men. I mean, we have a major gender gap in bicycling. I think it's like it's less than 30%, probably about 25% of people who ride bikes regularly in the U.S. are women. But the gap between people who bicycle and people who don't bicycle at all is much huger. I mean, less than 1% of people in the United States commute by bike regularly, or at least say so on their census form. So I think that what the women's bike movement really gets to the heart of is a bunch of people for whom this macho bicycle sport truly, truly does not work, who are able to get together and say, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't serve all of us. Let's create a bigger shift that goes beyond ourselves and really can change the world and not just create a nifty new bicycle product. And it's happening. But the industry, of course, you know, it's catching on a lot faster than it used to be, but it's hard to make these rapid changes, especially when, you know, your huge company is on the line.
Yeah, and I'm majorly disadvantaged here because A, I come from Europe, B, I'm really, really impatient. And, you know, it's totally what Ellie said. And I do understand that, but it's also, at a certain level, we just, there's this saying in Germany, if a German shuts up, it's they lost interest. So take my antsy poking comments here as that's really something I'm passionate about. And
right.
That
you
I
haven't
want
lost
to
interest.
I haven't lost interest yet. Yeah.
That's
so,
good.
But yeah, and I think that is something that we are so blessed here. We live in a soap bubble. I mean, you know, when Ellie said that, I was just like quietly quoting in my mind that actually the last BTA commuter questionnaire, we had certain age groups where we nearly were 40 to 50%, like where it was nearly even women and men commuting. And I know it's just a small questionnaire, and that is our soap bubble, you know. Mm. But so I think we just demonstrate that it can be done. But I mean, I do get it that overall in the U.S. we are still a small, we are a tiny minority.
Right, Ellie, you had something.
Really, everywhere in the U.S. though, that is embracing bicycle transportation more fully, where you have the shop that's like Clutter Cycles that sells the commuter and the family and the cargo bikes, and where you have like safe bike infrastructure or slower speed roads where people can ride more comfortably. Those are the places where you see less of a gender gap. And those are also the places where you see just a greater percentage of people riding. And I think that honestly, the thing that is most discriminatory is part less about the industry, but more about just the infrastructure available. And that's not to say that everybody has to have separated cycle tracks. So I think those are great, but it would be great if everywhere had a network of extremely low speed, nice wide streets where people could ride bikes without even being anywhere near speeding cars or without even having to be separated from speeding cars, because there were none. And I think that would be extremely productive on a number of levels. And, you know, I think honestly, like once we have conditions where all the people who want to ride bikes, a recent survey found that 60 or 70% of people in the U.S. want to ride a bicycle more often. And there's so many factors that go into your choice to ride bikes or not. But if we had conditions where those people could go out and kind of rediscover the joy of bicycling with a feeling of comfort and safety, you know, even if they were just riding their like old department store bike from that they bought in the 80s, then they would go and they would clamor and they would demand more from the industry. And I think that the industry would then and is now starting to wake up and start to provide that. Mm-hmm. But we really need to demand what we want. And honestly, I think demanding that from bicycle companies might even be more productive than demanding it from politicians, that because their job really is to listen to that.
Sure. Yeah. And it seems like business can drive kind of the way things work even more than politics sometimes.
Yeah. Right. So I think that was touched upon in last week's interview with Chris Smith about the idea of turning parking spots into bike corrals and how, you know, it originally went to the city first and the city said, no, this isn't going to work. And then businesses actually took it upon themselves. A few businesses took it upon themselves. And then suddenly, you know, businesses saw these other businesses succeeding because cyclists are going there.
Yeah.
And they go to the city and say, hey, we want bike racks in our parking spots.
Absolutely. And just to tie into Ellie, I mean, obviously there's always a cost factor, but if you think about it, I would challenge that any street, any city in the U.S. has streets that are side street, that are quieter streets. And sometimes I just wish they would just take out a green pen, you know, and take out their map and, you know, go along the side streets and just make kind of a little network. And perhaps it just has to be, I'm dreaming here.
that's allowed here.
You know, just thinking about it, like, why not just designate some of these not busy side streets, like neighborhood streets, just say, okay, this is like our bicycle street. You know, just put a few sharers on the floor, make a few stops, turn a few stop signs around, and perhaps that just has to happen. I don't know, but it would be, I mean, I would really challenge, there are streets in every city where there are less than 5 cars every hour. And why not designate those streets? And why not try to make perhaps a small network out of them, that they become bikeways, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
To build on what Martina said, I was recently in Corvallis doing an event with the Corvallis Bicycle Collective, which is a really cool organization. And that's a small city in Oregon that actually is one of the most bicycle-friendly cities in the state. They have a higher percentage of bike riders than we do in Portland. And in part, that's because somewhere over the last 20 years, they've made sure that every single street in Corvallis is a street that you can ride a bicycle on. And I think that example shows that, you know, this is achievable. It's actually not even that difficult. Like, maybe we'll never be riding our bicycles on the freeway, or, well, maybe not soon, but really almost any street can be made bike-friendly for very little cost and very little effort, and it really just pays off hugely, especially in opening up the opportunity for people to ride bikes who otherwise would have insurmountable barriers.
I hold out hope for the zombie apocalypse for the freeway thing, but that's impressive for Corvallis, just to have like every street qualifies. And I suppose they're a town of a certain size where that maybe is more possible than a larger city would be. But at the same time, like that's kind of commitment to access, which is pretty great.
It's a big deal.
So I'm curious, just from both of you, I assume our podcast probably has a higher ratio of male listeners to female listeners. I know here in town I've met a few, like Lily from Portland Afoot. I think she listens from time to time, and Esther from Honky Tonk Prison. But there's a whole bunch of guys who are just like bikes, and so.
Well, and it's two guys hosting.
It is two guys hosting. Yeah, so. I have thought about that before.
Or one and a half.
Right. So for. Any man listening, what are some things that a guy should know when dealing with women and cycling?
How can we be more sensitive to
yes.
the ladies?
What do we need to know?
Well, don't give your old bike to your girlfriend and think that would be just a fine fit. I swear to you, if I get that boyfriend that got all women, like the bunch of women that come in, like stuck with that stupid bike that they're having. It always seems to be the same guy. There must be kind of a mass bike giveaway. You know, this one boyfriend that gets just all these women stuck with these misfitting bikes.
I was going to say the same thing.
Serial romance. Serial romance has gone bad.
Yeah. So, women, man getting more sense. So I do think it's like, just if you want to get your girlfriend into cycling or your wife into cycling, just don't think that one of your old bikes will do it. Make sure that you take it seriously. When you go to a bike shop with her, you know, don't make it a tete-a-tete between you and the guy who's selling you the bike. She's there too. because that is like, that is actually seriously one of the points of advice that I want to give to, that I want to bring up at the National Bike Summit, is like, if you take your boyfriend or the man in your life bike shopping, make sure that he knows that he is there as moral support, but he's not supposed to talk to the mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
So butt out, you know, because I have that. I literally have that in the shop.
I was going to ask. Have you ever kicked the boyfriend out, or like just said like,
I wish, I seriously wish that I could do that.
Sure.
But I always make a point to actually talk to the woman and right. not to the guy. But very often there are guys who seriously, you know, it's like, here, it's about me. Me, 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 me. She needs a 21 speed. No, she doesn't. So it's really like women really need to be, you know, it's about them. If you so sure. It's really like try to find a rewind. So no, but it's really it's like make sure that that she's comfortable with the bike. That's uh-huh. like the important thing. And sometimes it's not the 21 speed. Sometimes it's the 8 speed internal hub because it's a sequential shifting. It's much easier.
Sometimes single speed.
Sometimes it's a single speed. Make sure that you have an equivalent amount of speeds, not that you like whoosh away with your 21 speed and she is, you know, puttering behind you with a 3-speed huffy. It's a big difference. No, but it's in general, it's like make sure that it's an appropriate bike. The other mm-hmm. thing is, and I nearly thought, so I'm a big fan of Crank My Chain Open Bike Night.
That's Dan Kaufman's project at VeloCult.
Yes, at VeloCult, and it's really awesome. It's every Wednesday in February at 7 o'clock. Sorry for the plug.
Plugs are accepted.
Yeah, we'll plug VeloCult.
It's totally awesome, and I've been there. But so if a woman overtakes you when biking, it's okay. You can deal with it. You're man enough. Don't try to, you know, don't feel kind of crushing your honor and try to overtake her again too, because that's like a problem I have. Mm-hmm. Very often it's like sometimes when I overtake a guy, they really feel challenged and they will race after me to the point where there was he looked like a really mild-mannered guy and I was in a hurry, so I overtook him. I hear heavy breathing behind me. He pulls up, puts in front of me. The guy nearly ran a red light just because he wanted to stick it to me.
Wow. That's
so
intense.
So don't do that.
Right. I mean, you hear the telltale shift of the derailleur.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was like the behind me.
Ellie, do you have any similar experiences?
I mean, you know, we've all had these experiences. I mean, I think a lot of the men listening to this show will be nodding along and being like, hey, I've had that experience too. I guess yeah. The one thing that I would say, you know, I mean, it's always good to listen and believe people when they talk about their experiences. And some guys, everybody, you know, sometimes has trouble doing that. And I think especially when it comes to gender, it's such a loaded issue. I would say the thing that I would most like to caution against, and I'm sure none of your listeners really have this strong feeling, but it is kind of a thing that you almost can't help thinking about. But when you see something that's like called the National Women's Bicycling Forum, like the one that's coming up in DC on March 4th, A, yes, you're invited if you're a man. B, the fact that you are not, you know, explicitly invited and asked to come doesn't mean you're not invited. It just means, you know, I don't know. That's something that guys got really up in arms about.
Invite me.
I didn't get a national men's bike.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I hear a lot. And I really would say, you know, I'm on the board of a all women's bicycling and business networking group called the Portland Society here in Portland, portlandsociety.org. And it's basically a networking and professional development group for women who are passionate about bicycling. And we hear all the time, like, gosh, you know, if there was a bicycle group just for men, everyone would be up in arms. And that always makes me laugh because there actually are several bicycling groups in Portland that are just for men, and it's fine. Like, there's a group called Wanderlust that's just for men, and it's a social ride that happens every week in the summer, and there's a few others, and nobody's up in arms about it, trust me.
Well, but then we do have women on wheels.
And it's not like they're discriminating. They just want to have, like, a manly space or a space where it's guys or, you know, whatever makes you comfortable. And, I mean, I think that's a very different thing from the places where it's kind of powerful. It says it's for everybody, but it's very powerfully assumed that men are the norm. You know, like, many bike races, like, you know, you'll hear the announcers at the race making fun of the women or making fun of the men that get passed by the women. And, you know, that's an openly hostile environment. But I think that whenever you see like a kind of explicitly gender segregated space that's just like, hey, this is just for women to do their thing, or this is just for men to do their thing, I think it's important to really respect that. Or if you see a space where it's called a women's event, but it's, you know, also open to men to come to as well, it does mean you're invited. It doesn't necessarily mean that you can go in and dominate the discussion with your thoughts about gender and feminism. So I would just urge, you know, I would just urge the guys out there to come to these things that they're invited to listen and to learn and to, you know, go out there and tell your fellow dudes who are not as enlightened about this as you to chill out, because that is really the big need that we have, honestly, yeah. Is like there are people that are the problem and they need to hear, they will not ever hear it from a woman that they are the problem and they need to stop. They need to hear it from another guy, and maybe that guy can be you.
Right, right. And that's the thing. It's the message that would not be well received coming from someone who was not as masculine as they were. But if...
Oh, trust me, it's not.
But if it, yeah, if it's two bros saying, dude, you do need to chill, then that may have a more lasting effect.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the sad fact is, and I think you touched on this, Ellie, most of the groups or whatever in cycling is sort of implicitly just for men, and not because of any like purposeful exclusion, but just because there's already such a gender gap. And so I think, you know, I know I'm more sensitive than any man I know. Well,
and I'm proud of you for that. Good job.
Yeah. Where was I? Oh yeah. But I think there needs to be sort of a, not segregated, but at least a stated, this group or this convention is just for women or just for whatever minority group it happens to be. Like in cycling, you know, yeah, women is very much a minority. And I think until there is more equality in numbers, then I think there we should allow a certain level of I hate to say segregation, but that's the only word I can think of.
It's kind of a word for it. I mean, I like to think of it as, so when I was in college once, I found myself living in the only women's dorm. And at first I was a little uncomfortable about that idea. I was like, why would that matter? But once I moved in, I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like all the things that you don't even notice, like the little things, like, you know, the way people like kind of interact socially that are kind of gender loaded and power loaded on a daily basis just weren't there. And it was the most amazing experience. And I mean, I think that's probably that men who are in all men's spaces feel that way often as well, that just some, like you don't even see the kind of your inherent assumptions and prejudices and dynamics until they're not there. And then that can really give you a space to sort of take a step back and assess and be like, oh, okay, when I go back out there into the world outside of the all women's dorm or the all women's group, now I know how to, you know, speak more confidently or talk in a more powerful way or, you know, be a better leader, be a better manager. And that's, you know, I think there's really nothing wrong with that. And it's, in a way it's too bad that it has to happen, but in a way it's what has to happen. So
yeah, I think
that's the best
of it. I'm sorry. What was that?
It has to be that way for now, unfortunately. Yeah. Maybe someday it won't, but it's kind of hard to imagine.
Although perhaps we can stake kind of a new course, because I mean, it was really interesting when you kind of tried to nail when you nailed this gender indifference in bicycling, because yesterday I found myself for the first time very, very, very consciously referring to bikes not as, oh, this is a guy's frame and this is a woman's frame and this is a, you know, I really try to very consciously say, this is a diamond frame, doesn't mean it's a guy's frame. This is a mixie, just because the bar is dropped doesn't mean that it is a woman's frame. And this is a step through, just because it's step through doesn't mean that it is, you know, a woman's frame.
But I still can wear a skirt on a step through.
You can wear a skirt on the step through if your shoulders are you. Or you can, I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who rock skirts on diamond frames.
That's true.
It's really, but it's like perhaps we can do it. Perhaps we can stake a new gender sensitivity when it comes to bicycling, because the really cool thing that always impresses me so much, being on a bike and cycling really fast or cycling long distances has very little to do with physical prowess.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance,
I can attest to that.
Yeah. I mean, I know we would just brought this earlier. We brought up this example, for instance, of Emily Finch. Emily Finch is like tops 130 pounds. And she rides this really heavy bike, and she rides it up hills. And there is like so much power in this woman. And I know a lot of women cyclists who might not be the fastest pedalers, but they have they have such powerful legs. And there are race teams here. Where I really think like these women are so strong and so powerful. And, you know, if it would come to like a competition where they have to pull stuff, you know, I think some of those women would like, you know, I don't want to say wipe the floor with a man, because that sounds, again, it doesn't go in the right direction here. It doesn't go in the right direction.
Positivity.
No, but the thing is,
they would excel. Yes.
They would excel. Yes. I do think that on a certain level, bicycling is a big leveler. It's not horsepower. It's not. It's really, you know, when I ride with my husband, I'm now at the level where I can ride same speed, more or less the same distance as my husband does. Mm-hmm. And so it's really wonderful and kind of reconnects us. If you think about it, bicycling did so much for emancipation going into, I'm a history buff, so... the reform bill, so, you know, up to beginning of 20th century, women wore corsets. The sport of bicycling went hand in hand with the reform clothing movement, so that women actually threw off the long skirts and the corsets.
Oh, yeah,
the
right
first
on.
Shorter skirts were actually bicycling skirts and culottes. Bicycling was like the one healthy sport that was... you know, that women were held to actually practice, although a lot of people were very concerned about, you know, there were very weird rumors about it. But, bicycling really did something to emancipation, and it actually for a long time also went hand in hand with the movement for women votes. That was like three things that oddly came together and freed women.
Interesting.
You know, so it's really, really interesting. So I hope that we can actually kind of tag on to that and revive that again, and get women out of cars and get women more towards active transportation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just thinking, tagging back to the idea of having gender separate groups or gender specific groups. There's probably a little bit of either... a good dynamic or maybe lacking dynamic of the flirty space. I'm not sure if there's a technical word for it, but just the idea that sometimes you want that flirty space. I feel like Pedalpalooza is a great example. Like there's a lot of rides where mm-hmm. people are just kind of hanging out, meeting each other, and guys and girls are talking, and you know, there's all that weird tension and energy in the air. But then there's a lot of places where like you just don't want that. So like the idea of a women's cycling club or organization might be a place where like you were saying, Ellie, kind of like the ladies' dorm, you go in there and like that flirty energy is not there, and sometimes maybe that's just a nice relaxing space to be in.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's funny. I started to learn how to fix my own bike by teaching myself on the internet and occasionally like getting a tip from somebody here and there, and then eventually I started dating this guy who was a really good bike mechanic, and he would just always fix my bike, and we never talked about it. Like it never occurred to me to continue fixing my own bike. I don't think it ever occurred to him not to fix my bike. It was just like we naturally fell into that pattern. And then after we broke up, I was like, wait a minute, what happened to me? Like, I like the first time I had to change a flat, I was like, oh no, who will fix my flat? And I was like, wait a minute, I know how to do this. I haven't done it in a while. And I think it's those unconscious roles that we take on often, and not just with gender, but with any number of ways that we sort ourselves out socially, that I think, you know, you don't even notice it until suddenly you're like not in that mode. So I think it's important to, you know, and not just to like, I mean, I think it's really interesting because there's this, in the bicycle movement, there's this really strong trend towards sort of advocacy and industry leading the way. And I come to it from a totally other perspective, which is where the people who are riding bikes are creating their own way. And I really see the women's cycling movement as sort of a microcosm of the cycling movement as a whole, where like we haven't had a seat at the table for decades and decades, so we're creating our own table. And I see the bike movement as doing that too. We're moving away from a form of bicycle advocacy where it was like, you know, these really like macho men being like, I will ride in the road with the cars, at the speed of the cars, I will take the lane, I will, mm-hmm. you know, never ask for a bike lane, I will, and anyone who can't ride like that shouldn't be riding a bike, you know. And now we're moving into this much more sort of like open perspective where like anybody who rides a bike can kind of create their own, you know, advocacy, can kind of like step up to the table and say, hey, we should do things this way, you know, like with Pedalpalooza, anyone who wants to lead a ride can be like, hey, I want to lead the architectural heritage ride, or I want to lead the Bowie versus Prince ride, or I want to lead the radical anarchist activist space ride. And anyone at all can, you know, kind of form a little movement of their own and move forward. So, and I see the women's movement in bicycling as really kind of doing that in a almost more intensive, focused way within bicycling, is being like, hey, we see where the bicycle movement has been going and we want to take it in a slightly different direction. We want to take everyone with us, and we're going there now, and we're not waiting around anymore. Like, we're impatient, we're going. Mm-hmm. And I think we will really see the larger bicycle movement as a whole following us very soon.
And I what I see as the big glue and the connective tissue is my business partner Ray Mullen actually put it in really good words. It's bicycling is more a lifestyle, or becomes more a lifestyle. So for me, it's really, it kind of gets very gender blurry, because I just want a neighborhood where I'm able to bike, and I really, you know, and we're kind of moving in the advocate area. We're just really moving towards active transportation. And if that is pedestrian or if that is bicycle, it's not that strict vehicular bicycling anymore. It's just like, we just want a neighborhood where people go in general slower, so walking and biking are possible. And that is, I think, that is where I think men, where there is no question of gender, where it starts to get really blurry, where it's just like, hey, I really don't care. I just want this. I want a livable neighborhood. That's like the main thing. And everybody, I think, can agree on that. And then with gender, which is such an iffy space, I mean, again, we have, and this is, in my mind, this is one of the main things, and I don't think, again, that is actually gender specific, but being cooped up in cars, I feel that we lost the ability to A, judge distances adequately. We lost the ability to judge what our bodies can really do. Because, I mean, if you tell somebody, hey, you know, go take a walk, there's something in town, the next food place is about a mile away, a lot of people look at you like, a mile? I can walk a mile.
Couldn't,
you know,
possibly.
Or I can cycle up this hill, and then you look at the hill and it's like, well, or, you know, or people are so conditioned by cars to misjudge distance, to misjudge hills, to misjudge their own ability, that is really something we need to overcome. That is something we need to overcome. And I have it with men and with women, that we're just, small things can be so like can totally throw them off. And the great thing about a bike is, and sorry if I kind of go a little bit in, on a tangent here, but the great thing with a bike is it's not like a car. If you can't get up that hill, you know what? Worst thing that happens is you get off the bike and you push it up the hill.
Right. You can't do that with a car.
You can't like, push your car up a hill and it's as just, easy.
Yeah, and it's basically, but for a lot of people, it's like if I can't sit and pedal, what is the alternative? Well, the alternative is you get off the bicycle and you push it up the hill. And it's just inconceivable.
Right.
So, yeah.
I love that you say that, Martina. I feel like the political climate that we're in right now, it's such a fight, like, on every level of politics for who controls our bodies, and especially women's bodies, you know, like who controls what we can do, where we can go, who we can interact with, even how we act and dress in public. And I think the bicycle movement really plays a part in that because, you know, the same as 150 years ago. I mean, if you have a bicycle, you control your own mobility and nobody can take that from you. And I think it's really the perfect vehicle for our times.
Who do you do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. We probably should, for brevity and sake of time, we should probably close this out. Is there anything else that either of you needed to kick in before we do so?
Hey, I just wanted to, again, shameless pitch. If anybody's interested, I have a Facebook place, Side Going, what every cyclist wants or needs. Please look it up. And if you have any idea about what you know, don't care about the gender or whatever, but what you need and what keeps you from cycling or what you wish you had if you are a cyclist, please like write some stuff on that wall and let me know. And I hope at one point that I actually do get a blog and a white paper together and hopefully get something together, either hook people up with products or perhaps even get somebody to make these products that we are missing. So what every cyclist needs.
And we'll have a link to that from our site as well. And you're also, Martina, you're at Clever Cycles, which is here in Portland.
I am at Clever Cycles here in Portland on Hawthorne.
Southeast Hawthorne and 9th?
Yes,
all right, yeah. That's a great shop. I highly recommend it. Ellie, you're from TakingTheLane.com?
Yes, I do. I publish feminist books about bicycling. So come to TakingTheLane.com and check them out. And my next one will be a anthology of feminist bicycle science fiction, and I'm actually accepting submissions through the end of February. So,
wahoo!
Send them on in.
Bikes in space.
Mm-hmm,
I can't wait.
It's going to be good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you both. And
hey, thanks for having us.
Definitely, Ellie. I have been drinking your iced tea. So if we bump into each other somewhere else, your next iced tea is on me.
All right. So
okay.
Find a good use.
Definitely. All right. Take care, Ellie. Have a good day.
Bye. You too.
Bye-bye.
Pause.
Okay. We might as well just roll right into it, right?
All right. I mean, do you need, like, to put a separate track? Or?
Nah.
Okay.
Nah. We'll
30 seconds
it.
Of buffering silence or something.
That's right. So welcome back to the Sprocket Podcast.
And we're back.
Yeah. And we're at that time. It's this one right here.
You've got some mail.
Paul, Tyler, and Dave chime in on Twitter about Black Hawk, Colorado. Paul says he wouldn't ride there. Ooh. Tyler wonders if anywhere is safe for people. What with the mobile phones, and Dave says that safety isn't an American priority yet.
Yeah, so I was kind of excited. This was a big flurry of Twitter activity, which I don't think the Sprocket Podcast on Twitter, which is, of course, at Sprocket Podcast, I don't think that's actually happened yet. So we sparked a flurry of discussion.
Interesting.
Hurrah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Glenn writes in from Port Townsend, Washington. Having just discovered your site, I've been enjoying your archives, episode 14. Guest Adam, would that be Adam Russ?
That was Adam Caress, my brother-in-law, and mulevariations.com editor.
Yeah, I like his writing. Guest Adam couldn't remember who he quoted, the operation of the machine. Quote, the operation of the machine becomes so odious that you must throw yourself into the gears. That's Mario Savio at Sproul Hall Plaza, December 1964. I wasn't there. I was only seven at the time. but I remember my parents talking about it. We lived in the Bay Area. Oh, yes. We are being as simple as possible on 8 acres near Port Townsend, Washington. I have some cycling experience, but prefer to concentrate on small sailing and rowing boats. For the last 4 years, we've done our crabbing under oars or sail.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. And I like, I'm not going to share his full name because that would be, you know, confidentiality and whatnot. But I do like the way he, his signature on his email is Glenn, PKA Black Douglas, master of the sloop boat Feather and the terror of Scow Bay. That's pretty great. Yeah. So, yeah. We got some upcoming shows.
Upcoming shows. Jonathan Moss from Bike Portland. We'll have to ask him about the hot tub on the bike.
Oh yeah, the Dutch tubs from Clever Cycles.
I couldn't remember the name. That's okay. Thank you. Apparently, he's riding around with their first one right now.
Oh, nice. Expect an article soon.
Yes.
Yeah.
On the 3rd, Mickey Blizzard, the Freeway Slayer.
Chong chong.
On the 10th, Michael Anderson from Portland Afoot, and the 17th, Allison Wiley from Diamond Cult. Cut Life?
DiamondCutLife.org. Yeah. Well, hey, this is the Sprocket Podcast. We have been happy to have you listening, and yeah. Look forward to seeing you for our next show next week.
Gentlemen, get sensitive.
I feel like that's right. I feel like we need some sign-off tagline phrase. Because Portland Afoot has on their podcast, what is it? Exit through the back, thank your bus driver, and yeah. And I can't remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, for the Sprocket Podcast, doing things and stuff with people.
Now go to bed.
Perfect. All right, let's close this thing out. Oh, boy.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks or suggestions for taglines.
That's
via
right.
Email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. And thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder. Find them at hurtbirdmusic.com.
And you know, sometimes there's nothing like an Elks Lodge.
Okay.
They're gender specific, but it's okay because there are other things like them, right? I don't know.
Sure.
Okay.
This is the women's auxiliary.
There is true. And Job's daughters.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.